Welcome everyone to another edition of the Dress of a Watch podcast.
Hi everyone. So today we're going to do another watch talk with a special guest, namely with Jorn Verdelin from Linde Verdelin. So we're just gonna wait till he's in here and then we're gonna start right away. Post, perfect. So today is another watch talk, another interview. Today I'm gonna talk to my friend Jorn Verdelin from Linde Verdelin. We're just gonna wait until he's in here and then we're gonna start off the interview. I'm very, very excited to have him on the show because I have a little story to tell him, and it's gonna be quite interesting to see. Hope everyone's doing well today. The weather today is not as nice, but still, as we're all working from home, everything's okay. So that's quite nice anyway. So we're just waiting for Jorn to join in and then we will start it off. Just waiting for him to join in and then we are gonna start today's session. So while we're waiting, today I'm wearing the Milgauss on a camouflage strap. Ah, have him here already. Perfect. Perfect. Hey, Jorn.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very good. How are you?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good, excellent. I'm just trying to find the position here so that I'm not too close to the camera.
Very good, very good. So how's life right now?
Well, it's a bit quiet, right? So
yeah.
a bit boring. Every day is like Groundhog Day. You know, you wake up and you have to stay inside, and the most exciting thing is to go for a run or go and buy some more stuff to eat or to drink.
I do understand.
Watch the day go past and then sort of you cross off at the end of the day, you know, now day 40 in lockdown. So and yourself, well, you're about to open up, right?
Yeah, we're about to open up. Yeah, definitely. So I think by beginning of May, we're going to open up.
Okay. Well,
so that's going to be interesting.
I have to say, after 6 weeks, it feels a bit like this is enough.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that Dario, he's asking if we got our shorts on. And yes, Dario.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so we're starting. We've been open a little bit for the past 2 weeks, so we're just slowly getting going. And I think by end of this week, we're gonna start a bit more, and then end of May is gonna open up totally with also restaurants and hotels and everything.
Okay,
so that's gonna be very.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Me too. I've been stuck in here for 6 weeks now in my apartment in Vienna. So yeah. I'm very happy to finally come out a little bit. And so.
Yeah. So that's I can definitely, agree with that. So it will pass.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think I'm very happy to have you on the show today. I started this during the quarantine, and it's been a very, very fun experience for me offering this platform.
Yeah.
And welcome.
Well, thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you got into watches.
Well, in some respect, I was always in watches because my, you know, my father, grandfather, and great grandfather were involved in the watch business too. So I, you know, I grew up with it. And but I don't think it was something that I, you know, meant to do, you know, for the rest of my life. And between I was, you know, 15, 18, and in my mid-30s, you know, I was not involved in watches. I had watches. I was interested in them. I enjoyed them. You know, I had a, you know, I wouldn't even call it a collection, but obviously bought and sold pieces. And then in 2002, Mort and Linda and I, we had this idea about a beautiful mechanical timepiece that you could use for sport, but in a very modern context, namely that you could attach digital instruments or electronic instruments on top of the mechanical watches for skiing and for diving. So we started with this idea in 2002, and when we started out, which was before the iPhone, you know, before many of the things that we sort of think of as normal things today, like, you know, Instagram and mobile phones and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So at that time, it was a very sort of out of the box idea. And even when we launched in 2006, at the end of 2006, it was still a very, you know, unusual idea to combine something which was not perceived as luxury, namely, you know, electronics or computers, with something which is very much a, you know, a scarcity in mechanical craftsmanship, you know, artisan products, you know, watches. So that's how it came about. And part of the reason that, you know, it was focused on skiing and diving was it's two universes that certainly I feel a lot for, especially skiing. And that again comes back full circle in the sense that when I was a child, you know, because my father went a lot to Switzerland, you know, we started skiing in Switzerland from a very early age, back in the 70s. And at that time, that was relatively unusual when you came from, you know, flat Denmark.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. What watch are you wearing today?
Nothing.
Really?
No, I had this one on earlier.
Very nice.
And then I was looking at this piece because we were working on a new edition of this. And then what else? I think that's it for today. You know, I was trying one with a different strap, which you may know something about. But I change watches, obviously, relatively often. But I have to say, when I sit down and work or do exercise, I rarely wear a watch. Okay. But I would find it very odd to walk outside or, you know, do something else without a watch.
Yeah.
So I take them on and off many times a day.
Okay. That's good to know. I've talked to a lot of people right now, and no one said that they were putting off their on and off their watch. So it's very interesting to see your perspective on that.
But I think that's why, you know, obviously you come from the strap universe, right? I think that's why straps are important, you know, because, you know, in order to be able to take it off and on and be comfortable with it and use it in, you know, humidity when it's warm, when it's cold, you know, et cetera, you know, a strap needs to withstand a lot of usage.
Yeah,
both on the outside and on the inside. And I think, you know, with our strap system, with the interchangeability, you know, it's always been a very integral part of the whole watch.
Yeah. That's a cool thing.
I guess you like to hear.
Yeah, definitely. So that's you know me, and I change my bracelets every day, but yeah. But rarely, sometimes the watch as well on a daily basis. Right now, I think I'm wearing 2-3 watches and putting them on and putting them off because I'm anyway at home, and so I can at least enjoy them.
Yeah, no, that's very true. You have more time to swap them around.
Yeah. So I need to tell you a little story.
Okay.
Because there's actually a fun story I didn't mention when we first met, but my brother and me, we used to go to Basel World every year, I think, as soon as we turned 17 or something, because we had a big booth there and we were used to working there a little bit. And one of the first times we came to Basel, we were checking out all the booths and having a look at all the watches. And we didn't really know a lot about watches at that time. So the fun story is that one day I was wandering around and then I found your booth. And it was so interesting because you were doing things that were at that time completely different than what I was used to seeing on a watch.
Okay.
And then I went to my brother, he was at our booth, and then I said, hey, you need to check out something. And then we went again to your booth, checked out all the watches, and this was the day we were super fond of your brand.
All right, okay.
And every year afterwards, we always went to the Linda Werdelin booth to check out what was new and what cool, exciting shape you were creating or design you were putting on. And that was cool because we're both big skiers as well.
Yeah.
So this digital device that you were able to put on your watch, this was something we were fond of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great. Good. Yeah. Do you remember what year it was?
I was talking to my brother earlier to find out which Basel World it was, but I think it's something around 2008, 2009, maybe 2010, something like that.
Okay, because the first year we participated was in 2009, where we were in Hall 4, and I remember it as, if this year is, you know, difficult for the industry, 2009 was also a difficult year for
yeah.
And on top of that, the rain was pouring down. And that was it was also the year when we came up with the first Vitalite. And then in 2010, I think we went all one.
Okay. So. And when did you move outside to this small?
To the palace?
Yeah, to the palace, yeah.
Let me just think, because we were in Basel, you know, first time 2009, and then last time in 2015. And between 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, for 4 years, we were at the palace.
Oh, okay. Okay. So definitely, I think it was then 2010,
yeah,
when you were in Hall 1, that we experienced the brand the first time.
Yeah, no, we had 2 years in Hall 1 where we were sort of, almost stuck against the wall.
Yeah.
Ourselves in.
Yeah.
Big brands. Yeah.
We still often talk about.
We won't meet each other at Basel anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately. But maybe it has some good things as well.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. So I just wanted to share the story with you a little bit.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. Because I was talking to him earlier, and then we were trying to figure out.
I'm sure that we made straps with you also then, didn't we?
I
made straps with you very early on.
That's true, because one of our colleagues, I think it was then maybe in 2012 when you were at the palace.
Hosegger, I think it was.
No, it was Mr. Nagel.
Okay.
He took us to the booth at the palace, and then we were, I think it was the first time we got a full collection introduction and everything, so that was super, super interesting, yeah. Yeah, so I still remember it very good. I wasn't sure about the year, but we still are very excited about your watches, and I must say the cool things that you have created with the Biformeta and the collaborations with the collaboration with Christian was very, very nice. So
yeah, no, that was it was kind of, you know, a relaunch in the which we did in, well, it started out in I guess in 2015, and we launched it in 2016. And for a long time, you know, we had only been focused on the two families, the Spyder, Spyderlite, Spyder Speed for going up, and the Octopus family for going into the sea.
Yeah.
And Christian called me, for some reason I was in the US, and we were just chatting about stuff, and he said, oh, so, you know, he was disappointed that he had missed out on a very old piece that we made back in 2008 or something, which had which was a three timer with either a green dial or brown dial, but we only made it in 22 pieces, and you know, so it was gone very quickly, and we started talking about whether, you know, we could make a series specifically, you know, for him, by him. So we came up with the three-timer Christian Hang, with sort of slightly olivey, you know, color combination with the dial and the strap. And the interest was so big. At the same time, when we launched our own pre-owned platform, actually in May 2016, and we could see that the interest for, you know, kind of the original collection was growing.
Yeah,
possibly at the same time as the interest for vintage watches, you know, started to grow, and we got so many requests that we felt that we wondered or we needed to build a collection around the original bifurometer model, and sort of reverting a little bit to how we started out. And right now, that collection consists of about, I think it's 8 or 9 different pieces.
Yeah.
And has become a nice, you know, part of. And I think now where we've sort of been around for, you know, almost 18 years, it seems right to have both the Octopus family, the Spyder family, and the original bifurometer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool to see. And I think you were one of the first to introduce this concept of having only limited editions.
Well, we've always, you know, we've always been of the view that, you know, I mean, if we call it luxury, it has to be scarce.
Yeah. And,
we've always had a nice, direct, personal part of our business. So even from the beginning, actually the first piece we ever did was a founder's watch, and we sold that on plan, or we invited people to buy it when it was in production, and we could see that you know, there was a possibility already then to sell directly to our customer and have that, you know, direct dialogue with the customer base. And even in 2009, when things were difficult, one of the reasons that, you know, we felt there was, you know, kind of that desire to go on was that, you know, selling to our customer directly was still there.
Yeah.
Then between 2009 and 2015, we just grew like, you know, I would say, you know, we grew too quickly and too much. So we, you know, we just had to run and you know, then in 15, we decided to change our business away from wholesale into direct. And fortunately, I can say now that in hindsight was a very good decision. But coming back to the limited edition, you know, we never wanted just to create a mass product, and by doing limited, it really tells people that, you know, obviously it's limited, and also that we have to constantly look at what's the next thing that we should do, and be innovative in the way of how do we think about our pieces.
Yeah.
So and you know, I don't see us moving away from that. clearly something that people like. And it's funny because sometimes we, when we see the pre-owned watches, we always know from the serial number, you know, and obviously from the you know, from the number of the edition, you know, where it came from. And actually later this year, we're going to introduce something which will, you know, track each of our watches, you know, going back to the beginning, which I think is going to be a nice addition to it.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So I will just check because we had a couple of comments. Mm-hmm. So Dietmar was saying that the Linde Wedelin watches are great and that he once had a moon face in titanium in his hands, made out of rose gold, with a rose gold bezel. And he says that it's a very, very amazing watch. Then Wristrockers says that the direct sale to the consumer, especially for smaller brands, is a very, very smart move, especially also for watch enthusiasts. And I believe I'm actually convinced he's absolutely right. I think it's more than time for the people to have a direct contact with brands and to be able to interact with them directly. And I think especially if you have like this timepiece.
Kind of a way of going back to how it was originally when you know, luxury, you know, became available to, you know, more people than, you know, the aristocracy and royalty. It was, you know, craftsmen that offered their, you know, very high quality products, you know, out of their workshop directly to the people that were interested in it. And so, I mean, you look like, you know, a brand like even Louis Vuitton started out like, you know, Cartier started out with, you know, making bespoke jewelry. So in the sense that we use the internet, it is, I guess, just another avenue of having a direct, you know, contact to our customer. And you know, when we do the, you know, the personal, you know, contact to customer, both for new pieces, for pre-owned, you know, for customization, it's just a kind of a reversal to what it used to be, rather than this combination of huge volume and huge profile, and maybe sort of less of, you know, a direct contact. And my feeling is definitely that not only a younger generation, but most people enjoy having that contact, right? So that when you buy something, that it has an emotional value more than just the price point.
Yeah.
And I think what we have seen for a period, in particular, you know, developing markets, the Middle East, some parts of Asia, you know, and other places which have opened up in the last, you know, 20 or 30 years for luxury goods, that maybe there is a sort of a trend towards something which is a little bit more, you know, subdued and a little bit more, you know, personalized and not so overt luxury. Yeah. And I just wonder if you know, the current situation, or, you know, the way that the world is changing right now will emphasize that.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, you know,
okay, so we have a slight connection problem, but I think we should be questions. Okay, so unfortunately we have a slight connection problem, but I'm sure Jorn will be right in and then we can continue the talk. I've just seen that there are some cool questions that watches and pens, you need a volcano. So, well, if you need one, then We can ask him if he can get you one, but I'm pretty sure that you will find one on their website, or at least you will find one maybe pre-owned quite soon. So let's put him back in. Very good. Yeah, so sorry.
Sorry, my phone was heating up.
Ah, okay.
Maybe I need to disconnect it or something. Let me see. So it became too warm. So, okay, let's try it with this.
So Watches and Pens was asking if he can get a volcano.
I'm sure we can talk about it. Yeah, I need a volcano. No, I mean that. I think that's a very beautiful piece that we made with Johnny Dowell.
Yeah,
towards the end of last year, and it was. It's the third project that we've done with Johnny Dowell, Aka King Nerd, and the first one was called The Reef, which was about the sea. The second one, Crazy Universe, which was obviously much bigger and about the universe. And then Johnny, we talked to Johnny about what would be the next thing. And he came up with this idea about a volcano and how do we make that? When we started talking about it, gold and black and, gray. And I said to Johnny, listen, let's try that, and before we started working on the watch itself, he obviously did some drawings which we were discussing, and afterwards we realized that both of us had sort of looked at it and said, well, either this is going to be a horrendous mistake and an awful watch, or it's going to be super cool. And there was a lot of back and forth and things that we could do and couldn't do, and for Johnny was also what were the possibilities in terms of engraving into titanium and inlaying gold, and using the gray with the gold and black, etc. And it took some time. It took about a year to make. And each piece takes at least a month to make, just for the case itself. So it's a lot of work. And what was new for Johnny in particular was that the gold, or the sort of the lava that's runs down over the case, has been inlaid. So basically, in engraving or removing some of the titanium, putting in gold, and then putting back the titanium around the gold. So it's not glued or put onto the titanium. It's simply just put in and packed around. And it's a very, artisanal, way of doing it. And I think we agreed that the end product, I think, is absolutely fantastic. But of course, I wouldn't say that. I would say that.
No, but it is very nice, I must say, and I've always admired the creative aspect of the watches that you create. So from my standpoint, and what I like a lot in watches is to have this aspect of cleanness.
Yeah.
Even though some dials might not be clean in a typical sense, but even though there's a lot going on for some watches, especially I think the Speedolite and the Octopus range, they still have this extremely nice look that brings you in, and then you can experience the watch from that. And so I think this is something you've done very, very nicely.
Yeah, I think that that is credit to to Morten and I guess our our Danish cultural heritage, right? But a watch is, our view is that that it's a combination of a lot of things. Sometimes when I hear how other people talk about watches, and I read an article today where, you know, the person, you know, told, well, it's just about the movement, and the rest is kind of doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And I disagree with that. I think it's much more of a, you know, a wholeness, which includes everything. It's, you know, for us, it's always been that balance between what's on the inside and what's on the outside. And at the end, I think that provides for a unique DNA that you can recognize the watch. So sometimes I'm asked, you know, are you going to do other watches or different watches? And I don't think so, because, I mean, at least not for now, because there's so much more that we can do and have to do, you know, both in terms of, you know, the movements and kind of combining things that we have already worked on,
yeah.
Materials, animations, and certainly the brands that I like the most are brands that are quite consistent. And sometimes, you know, I also view it in the sense that people have to get to know us, and they have to go through this journey from the point where they see us to, you know, the point where they actually decide to you know, buy one of our pieces, and that can take a decade, and. You know, if I turn it around and say, well, you know, if I'm on the lookout for, say, you know, a Porsche 911, and, you know, I'm 25 years old, and that's the top of my list, right? And then 15 years later, I can finally afford it. But actually now the Porsche 911 has turned into a Lamborghini. Then, you know, even if a Lamborghini is a beautiful car, you know, you will be disappointed, right?
Because
You have certain expectations, and if we would not be consistent, we would also not trust our own you know, judgment and our own, you know.
So maybe we need to try again. Yeah, I think we will just wait until Jorn is back, and so it's yeah, he did again. I think so too. It's very interesting to hear his story around the watches. I mean, I've been into the brand for quite some time, and what he's trying to say is basically that being consistent is so much more important in times like these. I think that. Especially if you have a new demographic, or if especially for the newer generations, that that showing them values and a consistent DNA is super important, because at the end, at some point in life, if you like something or you find something attractive, at one point that you will find it very, you might as well find it attractive at the point where you can afford it. So that's a quite nice thing to think about, I think, and that also makes a brand very valuable. So I think it heated again.
Sometimes mechanical is a lot better than electronics. I mean, I think this is just proves the case, you know, buy mechanical pieces and don't ever buy a quartz watch.
So while we were on the topic, while you were away, I was a bit explaining the values and the DNA behind being consistent as a brand as well, and why it's important to emphasize the point you made with the Porsche example. While we are on the topic of the DNA, maybe you can explain a bit more in depth the philosophy of Lindeveden.
So, I mean, in terms of the design?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe in terms of design and what makes the brand the brand, basically?
Well, it does go back to the original, which is that we were trying to make a mechanical timepiece where you could attach an instrument on top, and that provided for this, you know, very you know, sort of, you know, the shape of the case, and the original shape of that case still carries on into whether it is the spider going up or the octopus. Now it's, you know, without a strap, but it's essentially the,
yeah,
the, you know, the same piece. And so our two universes still remain the mountains and the sea. And apart from the design DNA, which I think remains very consistent, and we don't intend to change, at least, you know, not revolutionary, more like an evolution. The other, you know, kind of the essence of what we do is also, you know, as we talked about, the personality, the scarcity, and I would say the latest thing that we have been working on, not the latest thing, but what we've been working on for a number of years, was to change the way that we, you know, we operate, so that we have become a lot more sustainable. And it was, we didn't pursue sustainability on its own, but it actually came in a way that, as we were changing towards a new way of operating, which was far healthier for the company, it also turned out that it was very much more a sustainable way of working, and with much less you know, product use, much less wastage, and you know, much less, you know, traveling, you know, print, you know, many things that added up to something which we call, you know, circular economy. And earlier this year we were awarded you know, something, yeah, for, you know, circular economy, for something called positive luxury. And for us, that is you know, an essential part of, you know, who we are and what we do. And one of the things that really sort of made it for me, or sort of the pivoting point, was a couple of years ago when I was skiing in Chamonix, and I was skiing with a very old friend and mountain guide. And we were on the way down from Mont Blanc, and I was touching the rock face. And, you know, it's super smooth because of between a glacier and the rock face, there's like rubble that's just being, you know, I mean, over thousands of years. And it feels like silk. And as we're standing there, you know, he says to me, when we started skiing together, which was 25 years ago, we were 150 meters high up. So I looked up and said, 150 meters up. And I looked across, and it was like more than a kilometer across on the glacier. And I was just thinking, that is just crazy. In you know, half of my lifetime, 150 meters of ice just on this glacier has just gone, right? And it's accelerating. And you know, even if we were thinking about before, that really sort of made it for me that in terms of if we are a small company, we really need to think about how do we behave? How do we behave in terms of production? How do we behave in terms of, you know, towards the customer? That's where the pre-owned came in, the customization, et cetera, et cetera. What materials do we use? How do we use them? So for instance, you know, when we make, you know, new cases, we try as much as possible to use material which has already been dug out. I mean, there's enough steel in this world, there's enough gold in this world. And also in the production, and we are luckily starting out with a product which is very sustainable. I mean, we shouldn't forget that a watch in many instances, you know, stays on for a very long time. And even watches that I had in my childhood, you know, I've given on to, you know, my children, and I have watches that I've inherited from my great grandfather, etc. So, you know, they are pieces that stay around for a long time, but even so, I don't think that we should kind of rest on our laurels and say, you're much more sustainable than fast fashion or fashion. But really individually think about what can we do to cause as little harm as possible. And I think, what's the essence of, and I think that kind of governs, many of the decisions that we're making now and also in the future.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important, because if we think about it, then the next two generations, that they will have to take part in this world as well. And we want to give it back as nice as possible, or as healthy as possible.
Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah. So
if you have children, then that's, on top of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Johan. It's been a big pleasure for me talking to you and hearing your story and everything. It's very, very nice. And thank you a lot for taking your time.
The pleasure. I'm sorry I fell out of conversation. I'm thinking it was because I was charging at the same time as, so it overheated a little bit.
No, don't worry. It's good. It's these things happen on live sessions. So that's the cool part about it, and I enjoy it, and it's nice because it opens up. It works as an icebreaker for some people as well. So no, it's very, very nice.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Nicolas.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Enjoy your freedom when it comes.
I will. Same to you too, and stay safe.
Same to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. So this was the Watch Talk with Johan Wedelin, the CEO of Linde Wedelin. It was super exciting to talk to him. I really, really admire what he and Morten Linde created back in the days. And it's very, very cool to see these types of brands, smaller brands, independent brands, creating watches that are different. And I think we had a similar discussion with Raphael and with Lars from Wrist Rockers, where we talked a little bit about independent brands pushing the boundaries. And I think the same goes for Linde Wedelin as well. It's very cool to see what they're doing with the sustainability. And if you want to learn more about the brand, go check out their Instagram or look them up on the internet. Linde Wedelin, it's really amazing what they're doing. And their watches are definitely something else, but still very, very nice pieces. So thank you all for joining in today. It's been my pleasure having you, and I hope I brought some value to you too. I wish you all to stay safe, and I will be back tomorrow with another guest. So have a nice evening. Bye-bye.